Hi, this is Mike Grell, and I'm here with the Long Box guys, whoever the hell they are.
We're on the road, we're going home, to the place where wild nerds roam, with pretty girls and dudes and kids. Going to cons is our escape. It's like Mecca for geeks in a star-filled sky, where you can meet all your heroes and none of them fly.
Hey man, this is Kevin Smith, Silent Bob from all those terrible Jay and Silent Bob type pictures, and you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box. Comics talk for comics fans.
Hey everybody, and welcome to this episode of the Long Box Guys. With me are always are some of my very best friends since I was a very little kid. Josh, how you doing and what are you drinking today?
I'm doing good, and I'm drinking a cloud candy from Mighty Squirrel Brewing here in Massachusetts.
Cloud candy, can you describe it for us?
It's a nice fluffy little IPA. It's just rolling in at, okay, it's double dry hopped, I don't know, 6.8%. It's nice.
All right. I'm drinking beer tonight, too. I'm drinking your most hated beer on the entire planet, a nice Coors Light.
Yeah, that's actually burr. There's only one E in that. That's how little beer it actually is.
That's just burr. If a horse drinks Budweiser's and pisses it out ice cold, that's how you get Coors, folks. And that's what I'm drinking. Tommy, what are you doing? What are you drinking?
I am drinking some Dalwhinnie Scotch. Because I got to finish up some bottles before I leave my condo.
That's right. LT moving to the suburbs. Moving on up, George Jefferson style. Or as Mikey likes to say it, Jetson style. Mike, how you doing and what are you drinking?
I am doing excellent. My voice is finally recovered. So I apologize for the last few podcasts where I sounded like shit. But I appreciate all the members of the Long Box Legion who actually sent us emails telling me I sounded like shit. I thank you guys. I love you. And I am drinking some Eagle Rare Bourbon tonight.
Thanks for going out of your way to tell us that we sound like shit. Because in your little world, everything is black and white.
Well, you know what? They were right. I did sound like shit. And I ruined your segue. Ow! Maga, maga, maga!
We're sticking with that one, huh? We're going with
it. It's going to be a new thing.
Maga, maga, maga.
Balls to the wall for maga, maga, maga.
Right. Every time you hear us go maga, 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 which is what right-wing Fozzie Bear says, do a shot, folks. That's part of the newest drinking game here at the Long Box Guys. Do a shot whenever you hear maga, maga, maga. Speaking of black and white... Today we're going to be talking about Cloak and Dagger. The TV show came out. I believe I might be the winner on the Make It Through Cloak and Dagger because I had some free time today. Who got past episode one?
I did.
All right,
we're all hanging in. Who got past episode two?
I think I did.
All right, who got past episode three?
I'm not sure.
Boo! I just started up episode four today. Okay. And let me just say this about the television show. And this isn't a diss, but if you don't already love Cloak and Dagger, this TV show means nothing to you.
That's a ringing endorsement.
Wow.
Oh.
I don't understand what they were going for. The character development isn't slow. It isn't existent.
It's very slow.
It's incredibly, and like we still, it's episode three, and they've only used their powers, you know, unproductively or by mistake. I hate that. So let's talk a little bit about the comic books. Who wants to give us a little background?
I guess
that's Mikey.
Yeah, I guess it's you, Mike. Yeah,
I finally got my finger on it.
You've got a little lag going there, buddy.
Oh, this is bullshit. Josh was the one. I'm tired of you covering for Hopper.
I'll go, Mike. I don't mind.
No, it's fine. Apparently, I was lagging.
Last again, Mike. Last again.
Son of a... Tom is just upset because LT has been referring to me as early man, and it's driving him crazy. But anyways, Let's talk about Cloak and Dagger, first appearing in Peter Parker, the Spectacular Spider-Man, issue number 64, back in 1982, created by Bill Manito and Ed Hannigan. There are two characters, Cloak, a.k.a. Tyrone Ty Johnson, and Dagger Tandy Bowen. Their backstory is they were both runaways for different reasons. Ty, because he has a stuttering problem and was unable to tell the police not to shoot his brother in an accident gone bad. And Dagger, a.k.a. Tandy, she ran away because her mom was rich and didn't pay enough attention to her. They end up in New York City, where at the Port Authority, they are lured into a place by some drug dealers. They give them an experimental drug to see if they're going to survive. And unlike all the other teenage runaways who were experimented on, these two survive. The question then becomes is, why did they survive? We'll get into that when we talk about their origins, but let's talk about their powers. Cloak is one of the most powerful people in the Marvel Universe. He has access to the dark dimension. He can become intangible, and he can teleport through the dark dimension. So it takes him only a few steps, but he can travel vast distances, and it also allows him to put other people, teleport them too. The only bad part is they have to walk through the dark dimension to get wherever they need to go, and the dark dimension is not a good place. He uses his powers to torture drug dealers so that way they see their worst fears. People who have been in Cloak's dark dimension are very hesitant to ever go back into it. Dagger, on the other hand, creates daggers of light, which she uses to feed Cloak, and can also be used to hurt people or to heal people. So those are the two basic powers. So those are their powers, but now let's talk about why they have the powers. Is it because of the drug, or is it because they're mutants? So originally it was because of the drugs. Then later on, they changed it. No, they're mutants. Then they changed it later on to, no, they're mutates. And a mutate is a mutant who only becomes a mutant because of some sort of science experiment gone wrong. But later on, still again, during their time with the X-Men, they find out, no, they're not mutants. It's all because of the drugs that they were given originally. Wow, that's a really complicated story. They had a 4-issue miniseries, which I took out of my comic book collection and perused today. Man, that does not hold up. They had a 17-issue series after that, and because it was a bi-monthly series and sales were lagging really bad, and sales for Doctor Strange also sucked, they combined the two comics into Strange Tales, where it was still bi-monthly, and the sales were still horrible. They're mainly used as bit players in the Spider-Man universe, and occasionally they cross over with other people like the Runaways and the X-Men.
So I got a question for everybody here. Now Cloak and Dagger, I would say this is not a successful character comic, right? These guys have struggled the whole time. They had the smattering and Spectacular. They had the miniseries, which I don't even think I was surprised did well enough for them to launch. And then the launch was what, like you said, 19 issues. And even halfway through that, they retitled it to the one of the worst titles in the history of titles, The Mutant Misadventures of Cloak and Dagger. And then it just trails off and gets mixed in with Doctor Strange, and they sort of have that miasma, that sort of muckery with the Runaways, which is really sort of like the beginning of their comeback that just lets them be noticeable enough for people to start thinking they might be characters with a story worth telling. But overall, these guys have just struggled.
I agree with Josh there. The Mutant Misadventures of Cloak and Dagger was a ridiculous title. I always thought they were going to be like some kind of crazy, like Muppet Baby, like crossovery thing. Because I mean, the title was just so bad. But some of those comic books weren't actually terrible. it is surprising to me that they got the TV show, and it's surprising they're still around. They're just not impact players, despite the fact that they are fairly powerful. And one other thing we didn't really mention about Cloak and Dagger's origin story is they talk a lot about the drug use, and they were some of the first ones to really go into that.
Yeah, I don't think I can see why they were picked for the television show, honestly, because there's not a lot of content about them. They do have an interesting story. I just don't think they've been very well written or very well received. What kind of surprises me from the television aspect is that when Hulu licensed The Runaways, they didn't license Cloak and Dagger with them, which seems to me would have been a logical thing, but maybe that other thing was already underway. But the fact that they can see fears and see hopes and dreams and sort of cure people's ailments while being, you know, these powerful mutates, I think there's an interesting story to be told here. Nobody's done a very good job at it.
I think the reason they didn't do the runaway thing at the same time is it's obvious to me these guys haven't read a comic book.
But it's also interesting that Cloak and Dagger has also been characters that have also really, really focused heavily on the social issues of being runaway teenagers and also being very anti-drug. Every time they've been written, they have always focused on those two things. They're always fighting street crime that has to typically do with preying on runaway kids, and typically they're going after drug dealers.
That's true. One of the other powers that Dagger has is the ability to flush drugs out of someone's system with her daggers of light. We didn't mention that in the power set, but that is another one of the things she can do.
That's kind of interesting, but it also has kind of made them almost written in an almost sort of way because they have been hyper-focused on one thing.
Yeah, well, one of the reasons why they weren't part of the Runaway series or part of anything else is because they're Spider-Man characters, so therefore Sony owns them. So whatever licensing agreement for this TV show, it's going through Sony. It's not going to go through anybody else.
That's an excellent point.
And to tell you how bad these characters have been treated in the past, the X-Men make a point of telling them they're not mutants. And
the X-Men make a point of saying, we've tried all the tests that we can think of, and you're still not a mutant.
And you're out of the club. Did we mention you're out of the club?
You can stay here. We're not going to kick you out. But you're not a mutant.
No family for you.
Yeah. So what are you guys' favorite stories of Cloak and Dagger?
Well, obviously the best one ever is when Tandy points out that she has green eyes. Therefore, she is a mutant, and Charles Xavier should accept her into the school. sorry, that was me trying to be funny. I actually do have a storyline that I liked a lot. Do you guys remember when she went blind?
Yes.
Yeah, so Cloak and Dagger, I can't remember the issues. Mikey, do you remember those issues off the top of your brain?
I believe that was in their second series.
Second series. So, you know, being a being of pure light has its own problems set, and one of those is that she is not a mutant. Now, if you're a mutant, your body might have been able to mutate the cones and rods inside your eyes to be able to deal with the fact that you can now shoot off blinding lights of dagger lights. And hers did not. And she goes blind for, I believe it's 6 issues. The writers and the artists both went to the American Institute of the Seeing Impaired to study what this would be like. So they actually approached this from a you know, a very thoughtful standpoint, I thought. A lot of problems occur when someone goes blind, especially if it's instantaneously through an accident. I think they handled the issues with a lot of respect to the community, and they even tried to, you know, bring in a little bit of education, which I liked.
And then they undid it by letting her see again.
Yep. Don't worry, magic bullet, it's Marvel.
I will say, although I don't have a favorite series of them, I think their costumes are great. I'm surprised that Dagger's costume wasn't drawn by Mike Grell.
Mike Grell, yeah.
That's the first thing I saw. And I was like, oh, my God, can that cut go any lower? Mike Grell would say, yes, it could.
Yes.
Mike Grell would nod lasciviously and just get to work, baby.
I like to think it's inspired by Mike Grell.
So, a lot of things are inspired by Mike Grell, including what happened in my pants as a 15-year-old.
So one of my favorite stories was when Dagger gets put into the hospital, and it is supposedly because she was attacked by Cloak. And Cloak is on the run from the metahuman sort of a – he's on the run from the Avengers. He's on the run from all the good guys because they all think that he has attacked Dagger. And so he goes to the Runaways looking for help in clearing his name because he can't do the investigating himself because he's on the run. And so he brings the Runaways to New York, and they do the legwork for him and find out that it really was a fan of Dagger that puts her in the hospital where he works so that he can be around her. And he's really on MGH, mimicking Dagger Cloak's power set. And that, you know, he did this all kind of in a stalker-esque sort of way to be around Dagger and to have her with him. And it was a really decent story, and I liked it. And that was part of the Runaways that they did. And it was part of Cloak and Dagger Runaways and Reversals collected edition from March 2018.
And let's not forget Cloak and Dagger played a big part in one of Josh's favorite teams of all time, the Power Pack.
Yeah.
They yeah, did Josh, team up with Power Pack. It's true.
Josh seems really excited about that.
Super excited.
I did not read that one. I just read that happened, unfortunately. Mike, do you know?
I'm almost done with my Power Pack collection. And as soon as I get those last five issues, I'll be gifting them to you, Josh.
Wow.
So you did. So you did read these?
No, I haven't read any of them yet. I'm waiting until I get the whole collection so I can absorb it all at once.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mike wants to binge read it.
Yeah.
Well, I think one of the problems with Power Pack is they never actually. And Tommy's getting a little drunker than usual tonight for no apparent reason.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think one of the things that makes a good superhero is a great supervillain. And they didn't have any really great ones. They fought low-level, street-level drug dealers and Nightmare and Despair. Nightmare and Despair already had a great protagonist in the form of Doctor Strange. So I think one of the problems is they never really got their feet under him because they never had that great villain to fight. Mike, do you recall a better villain for them than I'm named?
Nope.
Yep. See, that's. I think that might be it.
I'm going to say my favorite Cloak and Dagger story is probably one of my least favorite Spider-Man stories, but that's about as much as overlap as I'm going to get. And say they were actually a pretty big part of Maximum Carnage.
Oh, yeah.
It was one of those just sort of like blowout. That was sort of in and amongst the world of Marvel getting so overblown with crossovers. There, where you had to have, like, this is issue 11B of Maximum Carnage, and you have to read these in order. And it got pretty irritating from a reader perspective. There was, like, 14 issues of Tom dropping shit and hearing it on tape. And then I can't even remember how many of the Carnages were out there. But Cloak and Dagger were a big part of that and making sure everybody could get to where they were going to fight all the different Carnages across the globe.
So for those of you who really want to see a good Cloak and Dagger, I recommend the 1984 film starring Dabney Coleman and Henry Thomas.
I remember that movie.
Yeah, the kid from E.T. He did more than one movie. He did two.
All right.
But once again, let's get back to the roots of ourselves here. We don't hate these characters. We do think that they haven't been used very properly. So if we had to say a couple things that might improve Cloak and Dagger standing in the Marvel Universe, it would be a good villain for them to fight, and maybe a little bit more a set power set for them. Because I actually do like that Dagger can now see hopes and dreams and Cloak can see fears. It works in perfectly with the characters.
Yeah, they are poorly counterbalanced, right? Cloak basically commands an entire dimension and can teleport as an intangible, and Dagger's power set isn't exactly a matching set to that.
Oh, she is a ballerina, so take that into account.
I have, and will continue to. But what I don't like is that they need to level set their powers so that they're more on the same plane. And if you're gonna rise to the level of Cloak, then you need to get away from the street level stuff they sort of converge on. Or if you're gonna bring him down to Dagger's level and make them street level heroes, then you gotta decide how that's gonna work for Cloak. So I don't think they ever really had a very solid identity from a power perspective. And you're right, Tom, they do not have any kind of nemesis or any real focus for them in the Marvel Universe, which is too bad, because I love the idea of the characters. I love the design, the powers. It's all good, but they just need to be balanced and then be put in their proper perspective.
Yeah.
On a joke level, I would say either Arcade or Jigsaw. But for reals, I mean, I think a character like the Kingpin or the Whale, Tobias Whale, would have been a good one for him.
It's a wrong universe, but...
Well, I meant something like that, the Tobias Whale and Kingpin are, yeah.
The same thing?
Same goddamn thing, yeah.
So what the problem is Dagger is, like you said, significantly less powerful than Cloak, or at least that's what it appears to be. And Cloak is too powerful for street-level thugs. So either they have, you know, there's no kind of conflict when he's intangible and their bullets and nothing can hurt him, right? So they either need to take on powerful supernatural creatures or focus on the street level. The way they were designed with runaways and being tested by drugs is a good basis, but it would have been better if they were actually started off as drug addicts, because then you have that conflict where they're experiencing and you see more of a reason for them to be so anti-drug, whereas with their origin story, when you read it, you're like, okay, yeah, the first time they ever experimented with drugs, it almost killed them and gave them these powers. And they saw all these other dead kids, and that's why they're all about it. So, yeah.
It was also kind of interesting that they decided to switch the socioeconomic background of the two characters in the comic book to the TV show, giving Ty the more stable family, the more educated family, and making Dagger's family, street trash. And she's the runaway that is poor and impoverished, and he has the more stable home.
Does he still stutter on the TV show? Because I haven't watched any of it.
He didn't stutter on the TV show, except when he's talking to girls. Almost an homage to the fact that he was a stutterer. Because he doesn't really stutter. He just kind of awkward.
Yeah, I think I wish that if they were going to bring Cloak down just to have him have a blackout power and short range teleportation and have him be more of a physical combatant. And I think they would have made a great street level team.
Yeah, it does bother me that they do list her ballerina abilities under her street fighting abilities, because she combines. They do. If you look under her power set, she has the street fighting ability of a highly trained ballerina.
Yeah.
All right.
When I'm in a street fight, I'm like, man, I wish Baryshnikov was here.
That guy would have kicked our asses all over the place.
Exactly. That's what I was saying.
I know.
Maga, maga, maga.
Shrink.
Yeah, but put us in there with like an 84-pound waif from the Swan King, and we'll handle our shit.
I'm up to handle myself.
Speaking of which, episode 2, very close call on a rape scene. Pretty powerful stuff. A little hard to watch, actually.
Alan Moore's influence creeping in all over the place.
And two different times people got roofied in the first episode. Just saying.
The show seems to be going okay. You're right, Tom. It's very slow. The character dev is pretty damn slow.
My wife says I say that about every single TV show. That it's just too goddamn slow. I said it about Crank, for God's sakes. It's just so goddamn slow. All right, any last words on Cloak and Dagger, or are we ready to move on? That's us moving on, folks. Maga, maga, maga.
Crank.
Crank.
Bye. Tom, LT, what do you got in the back of the long box today?
Let's start with yourself. Cloak and Dagger Lost and Found. This reprints Cloak and Dagger 1985 to 1987, 1-11. And you know what I like about this series? It has Cloak and Dagger spending their time being taken in by a priest in a church, and that's where their sanctuary is, that's where their base of operations is. And the priest the entire time is convinced that Cloak is a demon, and he's trying to save the soul of Dagger by trying to convince her to leave the demon Cloak. And I love that about this series.
So the horrible priest taking terrible advantage of the two teenagers is what you like most.
Yeah.
The Catholic Church really did you in, son.
Yeah, I just love it because he's convinced that Cloak is a demon. He's like, "You, Dagger, you can leave at any time, you know. Let me try to get you back together with your parents. You can leave this lifestyle. It's not for you."
Mikey, what are you at the front of the long box?
Demon Jew.
At the front of the long box, I have the Justice League versus the Suicide Squad. It was a 6-issue series from 2017. I'm trying to catch up on my Justice League, so I polished off about 24 issues yesterday. Still not caught up. But out of all of them, this is the best of the series that I read. In it, the first Suicide Squad is being controlled by Max Lord, who wants revenge against both the Justice League and Amanda Waller, and craziness ensues. I don't want to spoil it if you're going to read it, but if you like DC Comics pre-Rebirth, this has got a lot of Easter eggs in it for you. They reintroduce Dr. Polaris, Max Lord, Superman, who we know is from the pre-New 52 universe. As soon as he sees Max Lord, he's like, oh, I know all about this guy. But the whole time they're doing this, there's a major supervillain from DC Universe's past that finally reappears in this series, and it's his first appearance in Rebirth. It's a very well done, and they also allude to the fact that time is all screwed up, which I also like, because that all leads into what is going on right now in the Before the Watchmen.
All right, well, that was pretty good. Mike, you're not going to give us a hint at who the big bad at the end is?
Well, it's in issue 1 or issue 2, so I guess I can't really spoil too much of it. It's Eclipso.
Eclipso is pretty cool.
Yeah. If I were you, I'd read just the 6-issue series. I wouldn't read the Justice League or the Suicide Squad tie-ins. They're not pertinent to the story itself, and they weren't really as good.
By the way, one of Eclipso's power, could he go intangible?
Well, sort of. I mean, he possesses people.
Oh, I'm sorry. I said intangible, and what I really meant was time for a tangent. Josh, do you have a tangent for us?
I do. So I was digging through my collection of Blu-rays at one point, and I had had this conversation with somebody about the transformation of sort of animated film and remakes and how Westerns sort of influenced a lot of the martial arts movies and vice versa. And so I have this movie called Yurusari Zarimono, which is the Japanese remake of Clint Eastwood's Unforgiven. So Ken Watanabe makes a samurai version of Unforgiven, sort of in the reverse effect that Clint Eastwood stole and so many directors in the East stole samurai movies and turned them into Westerns. And if you haven't seen it, it's fantastic. And I have it in Blu-ray, but it's in a format that I can't find anything that can read. So I've had it for a while. I've only seen it a couple of times. I'm still looking for a codec on my computer to do it. But so here's the question. Favorite sort of transition or remake that was so different? Not like a remake like in Ghostbusters sort of a remake, but in like a Yojimbo to what's the Yojimbo one there by Clint Eastwood?
Bill Ryder?
No. It's why can't I think of it? Yojimbo.
I think it's Pale Rider.
It is not Pale Rider. It is Fistful of Dollars. Yojimbo is a Fistful of Dollars, and then the sequel to Yojimbo, Sanjuro, is
for a few dollars more.
A few dollars more, yeah. So, favorite sort of transitional movie like that?
I'm going to go with the Seven Samurai being translated over into the Magnificent Seven. And the second, the just redone Magnificent Seven. I like that movie even better than the original.
Really?
Wait,
really?
Yeah, have you guys seen the latest Magnificent Seven?
I saw it. Me and Tom saw that.
Did they make another
together.
One?
LT, you fucking
did they make
idiot.
A third?
Idiot, we saw it in the theater together.
I know we saw it together.
You didn't like it?
I just don't understand.
I thought it was okay, but I didn't.
I'm not sure if he's talking out loud.
I believe that man is wearing a bear.
Yeah. I love the second one. But it wasn't as good as the first one.
I think
come
it was
on.
As good as the first.
Oh, it was. It was better than the first one.
I really enjoyed the second one. As a matter of fact, I've seen it a couple times now. But it's not as good as the original Magnificent Seven.
Which wasn't as good as the Seven Samurai.
Well, The Office comes to mind right off the top of my head.
That is a good translation.
That's a great translation. I thought I thought we really made it our own. I mean, the British one was brilliant and stands alone as a great look at British office life and making fun of British office life. I think The Office here is a great – it does the exact same thing for us. And though it's different in a lot of ways, I think it's a good comparison. So I think that's one that I would say I liked. Anybody else?
I was going to go with Seven Samurai and the Magnificent Seven, but I was going to go with the original Magnificent Seven.
LT, this is one of the ones I'm going to have to agree with you on. I think our good buddy Brock Jarlson would say that's true. He's our good friend, Brock, frequent listener and friend of the podcast, Brock Jarlson.
Does he listen?
Who knows?
Okay. I'm like, what? Really?
Maybe. I don't know. Why not?
Maybe. I don't know.
Why not? He really liked Coupling, and he waxed loquaciously.
Whoa. Coupling was so superior to Friends.
Yeah, he would say that Coupling was Friends, and I'm like, I don't know.
Coupling was like a thousand million times better than Friends.
Really? Are you going to the Super Bowl with that hyperbole?
Yeah.
Just wondering. Mike's desperately looking something up so he can have something to talk about because he has no idea what's going on here.
I mean,
the Mike's like, well, the Russian version of Rocky III, where Ivan Drago just kicks the shit out of everybody.
Now, there's a movie I'm looking up, and I'm trying to see if it was actually a remake of something or not. I thought it was.
What's the movie?
It is. The Departed.
Oh, yeah, The Departed was originally a Japanese movie called something like The Rats or something.
Infernal Affairs.
Infernal Affairs, that was it. And, yeah. But The Departed was a pretty good movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, if you want to look at something that was, like, not based on one or the other, but a total, like, mix of the two, Sukiyaki Western Django is a ridiculous, totally ridiculous movie, which is awesome.
12-String Samurai must be based off of something.
What's that?
12-String Samurai?
Six-String Samurai. Yeah, I love Six-String Samurai.
It's a great movie.
I've yet to see that.
Holy shit.
Dude. I
did not realize Reservoir Dogs was a remake of City of Fire, a Hong Kong movie.
I did not know that either.
Yeah,
did you get a chance to see Yuru Sari Zarimono, the version of Unforgiven? Ken Watanabe, it's awesome. Such a good film.
I'm surprised you didn't say Ran, Josh.
That too.
It's a great, another great one. I know you turned me out of that one. I think I still have your video here.
I turned me out of that one, and I still have it.
I think I still have it. That was a remake kind of Macbeth.
I think my old boss still has my Six-String Samurai DVD.
Oh, my God. Have you seen Scotland, PA?
No.
No.
It is a remake of Macbeth, and it is genius. It's all about a burger joint called McDonald's. It is a beautiful retelling of the Macbeth story. I love it. Scotland, PA.
Where? Check it out. Is that Netflix or Hulu or?
I owned it on VHS.
Well, that's not helpful.
I rented it from Blockbuster, and I love the movie so much that when it actually came out on video where I could afford to buy it, and aka the bargain bin at Blockbuster, I picked it up.
You know, there's still one Blockbuster open.
It's in Alaska, isn't it?
Yeah.
Christopher Walken's in it.
Yeah.
James Reborn.
Amy How have Smarter, I not seen this movie?
Andy Dick. Oh, my God.
They got Dick. How did they get Dick?
It is amazing, guys. I'm telling you, you need to see Scotland, PA if you get a chance.
All right, someone send a link if they find it.
So that's one of the writers is William Shakespeare.
It's nice. Get a little homage in there.
It's a little homage there. They're not fucking around. And the poster's amazing. So for the who's at home who can't see the poster I'm looking at, it's the traditional like red backsplash for Macbeth, except there is a bloody spatula on the front.
Nice.
It's fucking brilliant.
It has a freaking Greek chorus in it. I'm just saying.
You gotta are they working the fry later?
Yeah. Holy shit. I gotta find this movie.
Wait, are they working the fry later? If the Green Chorus is working the fry letter, I'm fucking in.
This looks fantastic. This is a 2001 comedy.
All right. Yeah. Everybody Gross,
Mark Tierney, Christopher Walken, Kevin Corrigan, James Rebhorn. I am totally in on this.
So, next Longbox
episode
Legion.
Episode of Longbox.
Longbox Legion, your homework is to go find a copy of Scotland, PA and watch this movie and then write to us at luckybastard@thelongboxguys.com and let us know what you think. Or you can tweet us at @thelongboxguys. Or even better, go over to our Patreon page and join the Longbox Legion and make a comment there. For just $1 a month, you get the greatest of all time, and we might have the greatest of all time Macbeth remake in Scotland, PA. So
we'll broadcast live from Scotland, Pennsylvania.
There we go.
Yeah, Warden like that.
I'm in.
Yeah.
And don't forget that we
have $1,000. Wow.
And don't forget, if you're a member of the Longbox Legion, you can also be on the actual podcast. Shout out to Diane, who was on last week. And thanks again for helping us when some of our folks were out.
Got it. I mean, thanks, Diane.
You can buy a pre-owned version of Skyline PA for $17.99 on eBay right now.
It's got to be on some streaming channel somewhere. I'm not $17.
Yeah, I already bought it. You can't buy that copy.
We can all just go over to Tom's and watch it.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah. Mike will be up here soon enough, and we'll all just watch it.
Yeah. We'll watch it at Josh's, though. He's got that big screen TV.
His TV is – it's hard to watch his TV. It's so good, it looks like there are people over there. Like, I'm distracted by the fact that it looks like it's a play. And that'll about do us. Let's take a couple of minutes to plug some of our favorite people out there. Kirby Crackle, we just talked about you on our last episode when we were talking about Geek Rock. Thanks a lot, guys, for always letting us play your music. And just thanks for being out there. Your new album rocks. I bought 3 tracks from it. I usually buy tracks instead of full albums now because I'm a cheap son of a bitch. But there's a couple good songs on there.
I like their new album so much, I bought it twice. And it's not because I didn't know how Bandcamp worked.
I might actually buy it twice because I might buy a DVD next time we see them because I like having them signed. And you're an idiot. LT, what do you got for us?
I'd like to plug Jim Speak Ego, the creator of the Ballad of Barry Allen.
A great geek rock song. I'd also like to plug Ian Leno. Yeah, I would.
Yeah, I bet you would.
He's a pretty man.
He's a pretty, pretty man. Him and Tammy are fine makers of such things as scotch glasses, T-shirts, and stained glass, and owners of 3 of the cutest feet you'll ever find on this planet.
Their website is geekorthodox.com.
Geekorthodox.com.
Josh, anything to plug over there?
Yeah, Epic Nerd Camp. It just finished for the year, but keep an eye out for 2019 dates. Friendly Neighborhood Comics in Bellingham, Massachusetts. And Mighty Squirrel Beer. They have a brewery opening up in Waltham in a few months. Go check them out.
I will check them out. Thank you for that recommendation.
I'd like to thank our fellow podcasters. You can go to Who's Next Gaming or Losing Lives. It's both the same guys. They do different reviews of games. Or as far as Losing Lives goes, they actually watch video game-themed movies. They watch the movies so you don't have to. Thank you for that. You're doing the Lord's work because I do not want to watch Surf Ninjas or Max Payne.
I like both of those movies.
True that.
How about Double Dragon?
You go ahead and put in a request, but I think they might have already done Double Dragon.
I've done Double Dragon.
I'm sure you have.
Alyssa Milano has never looked cuter than when she's wearing nothing but suspenders and short shorts. I'd also like to say rest in peace Robbie Rotten from Lazy Town, a fine actor, and always got me to want to exercise. Do you guys remember that TV show?
Yeah, I'm just surprised that if you were going to mention people who have passed this week, you went with that guy instead of John McCain.
It's too soon on John McCain. I'm so sad about that.
Okay.
Yeah, Robbie Rotten. I was like, man, all right. Rest in peace, guy.
Man, let's keep these thoughts to ourselves, Tom.
All right. As long as we've mentioned John McCain, let's say this about a fine American. Whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, at least he was someone you can talk to about the issues. I think rhetoric on the has gone like insane on both sides. And at least having a moderate voice out there is something that will be sorely missed.
Indeed.
And if he had just picked a different running mate, I could have voted for John McCain. I really could have. Josh, is Alyssa Milano in Double Dragon your sector?
If she's just wearing the suspenders, then yes.
Yeah. Damn right she is. Mikey, what's this podcast like to you?
It's like Drunk History, but for comics.
And LT, sweet, sweet LT, what do you always say there, buddy?
I say it's like the most stressful thing you can do. It's just like buying a house.
That's exactly what it is. Just like buying a house. And don't forget what I always say. Don't diss what you hate. Just promote what you love. You'll probably live longer. Probably. And we love you from the Long Box, guys.
It's the sound of a heart letting go.
How much can you stand to be crammed down your throat? And just so you know, because I know you and it's full of hatred, there'll be a high sugar content. It'll be like raisiny.